Welcome to week number 241 of the Two Guys in the Fridays podcast. My name is Steven. That over there is Travis.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. It's morning.
Good.
It's not. Well, I guess this always comes out in the morning too, right?
Yeah.
It does.
It does. Yeah. It does.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Come watch some TGIF with us. We'll talk about it. Do you think people watch the episodes as we do? I like to think they do, but I don't know if they actually do.
Of course they do.
I mean, they don't need to because we kind of tell them what happens, but I wonder if there's some people that like watch it in preparation for our episodes and then like follow.
Maybe. That'd be cool. Yeah. That would be cool. Yeah.
Thanks to Joaquin for the theme song this week.
Thanks, Joaquin. Appreciate that.
TGIFcast@gmail.com. That's where you can send in your own version of the theme song, and we'll play it on the show.
Yeah, we definitely will.
Travis still has not done an updated saxophone version.
I need to. I'm sorry. I will do that in the next week or two.
Believe it when it happens.
I'll do it. Promise.
TGIFcast on all social media. And what else? Is this where we like look back and see what was going on?
Yeah, I think that's all the intro stuff, and then we'll get into the 30 years ago today.
When did this episode or these four episodes air?
Friday, March 29th, 1994.
April.
Sorry, man. April 29th, 1994.
Okay. I was looking at some news because we do like to see what was going on in the world 30 years ago this week, and a lot of people died.
Oh, no.
And not like
Kurt Cobain?
Not like a few famous people, just like a lot of people died.
Oh, okay.
Starting off like on the 24th and 25th, a bunch of bombings in Johannesburg, South Africa. They were getting prepared for the first ever multiracial elections, the first ever, were happening this week, and there were a bunch of bombings that led up until the actual like voting started, I guess, in
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
So that was like at least 16 people died there. Then you've got the 25th. There was a boat that had school children on it, capsized in Larnaca, Syria. 46 people died. It's not a happy week, I'm telling you.
No, but like also, this list sucks.
Why? Because that's on there and Kurt Cobain's not on? You're still on that?
Well, no, just because like, sure, was that news back then? Absolutely. Is that still like, is that like relevant news that needs to be repeated every year? I don't know about that. I don't know. It's just weird. It's just weird.
You can do this part of the show if you want, and I don't have to do it.
No. I appreciate you doing it. I'm not complaining about it.
Then the next day, on the 26th, more people died. A Taiwan Airbus A300 crashes in Nagoya, Japan. 262 people die.
Oy.
Then, the 29th, more people died.
Okay.
A ferry boat. We're just getting bigger and bigger, too. A ferry boat smashes into Mombasa Harbor in Kenya. Over 300 people die.
Okay.
And then I was like, that's enough dying. We're done for this week. What about birthdays? You got anything?
No birthdays.
All right. So,
like we said. Wait. What? I do have other things.
What else you got?
Number one song.
Oh, yeah.
In the United States in 1994, this week, still bump and grind. So there's that. But we do have a new movie. I had not heard of this movie until I went back and watched it because it was the number one movie 30 years ago. Have you ever heard of Bad Girls? I'm going to say no.
Is Queen Latifah in it?
No. It has one of your favorite actresses, Drew Barrymore.
Oh, God.
Madeline Stowe, Mary Stuart Masterson, Andy McDowell, Dermot Mulroney. It's a Western with the women as the main, like as the kind of the outlaw group in the Western. Does this movie ring a bell at all to you?
Maybe a little.
Wasn't to me. Did not to me. I watched it.
I'm kind of picturing some of these actresses in like cowgirl Western outfit garb. Kind of things. Yeah.
I will say, as of note, the one kind of little fun note about this movie is that Andie MacDowell with this movie became the second actress in film history. No, sorry, the first. The first actress in film history to star in two back-to-back number one films. Because last week she had Four Weddings and a Funeral, and this week she has Bad Girls.
You said actress or actor?
Actress.
Okay.
Actress.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah.
You would have thought cool. It would have been done already, but maybe not. I mean, obviously not.
I mean, it's probably pretty rare that even for an actor, unless it's like somebody who maybe had like a bit part in one movie and a major part in another. I don't know. It seems like a tough thing to pull off regardless. So.
I bet it's happened pretty recently.
Recently?
Yeah. In the last 3 years.
You're probably right now. I feel like there's only like five actors and actresses in Hollywood right now anyway.
That's true, too. The Rock probably has back-to-back movies.
Especially when it comes to like number one level movies, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, there's only like five people making movies right now. So you're probably right. I'm looking at like the number one movies from last year. Yeah, I mean, Chris Pratt was in Super Mario Brothers and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Back-to-back weeks, number one?
Back-to-back. I mean, yeah, he voiced Super Mario Bros., but still, he was in it. So yeah. It.
All right.
Yeah, so.
Family Matters. Season 5, episode. I think we're on episode 22. Or no, we're on 22, but it's listed as 23.
Technically, Nicolas Cage was in The Flash and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Nonsense is the name of this episode.
Nonsense.
It starts off... Laura and Steve are on the couch in the living room. They're studying some French, and he's trying to lave some moves down on her in French and tries to get a kiss out of her. But, you know, Laura, she tells him, close your eyes, and she puts a peach in his face and kisses it anyways. He loves it, but then he's like, I think you need to shave. That's your intro.
Oh, Steve and Laura. I will never get this whole Steve still making out with Laura, trying to make out with Laura while he's in a relationship with Myra, but whatever.
Look, the ladies cannot lay off of Steve. He can't help it. It's not his fault. Theme song, we come back. We're still in that same spot in the living room. Doorbell rings. She's back. Myra's there. I don't know how many episodes it's been since she's been on here. I feel like it's been a few.
She comes and goes, man. I don't get it. Again, it's just a weird relationship, and it drives me insane.
Yeah, she comes over because it's like hanky something, like she's the hanky.
She
panky
so
monitor.
She knows they're studying, and yeah, and she wants to supervise to make sure there's no hanky panky, even though she's already like 5 minutes too late.
Yeah, so Myra and Steve are flirting a little. Laura's getting a little annoyed by it. Steve tells Myra, "Look, you don't need to be here. You don't need to worry about me." And then Myra's like mentioning. She drops a little bit of a diss on Laura, saying that Ziggy... Is Ziggy the newspaper guy, or is Ziggy some random
guy? Yeah. I really like this. They brought this back and kind of closed the loop on this, but Ziggy was the newspaper guy.
Ziggy dumped Laura. Laura says they just decided that they weren't right for each other. And then Laura finds Myra's drawing book, and she pulls this thing out. It's a bunch of pictures and stuff, things she's been drawing. And
wait. Before we get to the final picture, yeah. There's some of these pictures are worth mentioning. It starts with a really good picture of Steve.
Yep.
And then there's a great picture of Myra hitting Laura with a bus.
Yeah, Myra's driving the bus, and Laura's just getting smacked by it.
Yeah. And then it kind of continues.
Yeah. The big one at the end is a naked picture of Steve. Myra mentions that Steve has the body of a Greek god. And Steve's a little upset about this picture because there's a few things going on.
Yeah.
One, he's naked in this picture. Two, it's also a picture of his bedroom, which Myra's never seen. And this bedroom is drawn to detail. The alarm clock's there. All the little details are there.
And... So let's talk about that for a second. So Myra and Steve are allegedly dating.
Sure.
Allegedly. That's what the show tries to tell us, that they are dating.
Okay.
She's never seen his room. That's fine. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
That's not the problem. The problem is that Steve gets really mad about this, even though he stalks Laura all the time, climbs in her window without asking.
True, that is true.
He's definitely outside of her window when she doesn't want him to be. And they're not even dating. He's just the annoying neighbor that she's always trying to get rid of.
Didn't even so think it seems about it. Like 100% right.
A bit of a hypocritical situation here.
Yeah, I mean, he gets mad at her. He even gets to the point where he calls her crazy and then says, "That's it, Myra. We're through." He breaks up with her, right? Well, even if I don't even know if they're together or not, but I think they
are. Who knows? Whatever.
But he's like, "That's it. I'm leaving." He starts to go out the door and he's like, "You hurt me deeply, Myra." And then hits the door on the way out because he forgets to open it. And he's like, "And so did that hurt him deeply." Next scene, we've got Carl. He's upstairs in the bathroom. He's shaving. And he finds Harriet's wedding ring in the sink. I think he kind of knocks it off the counter or something. And then he gets mad because apparently she's been doing this a lot. He's been telling her, "Don't leave your wedding ring there. It could fall off, go down the sink." But also, he's just like, "Why are you even taking off your wedding ring? Doesn't this mean anything to you?" And then she gets mad at him for even asking that question.
Well, it is a silly question because it seems like she's only doing it like when she is washing her hands or, you know, doing stuff in the bathroom that really isn't conducive to having a ring on. But it seems like she's maybe a little bit forgetful about putting it back on.
Yeah. So that's our little subplot for this episode. Now we go to Waldo and Eddie. They're hanging out on the couch. They're talking about some girl that was looking at Eddie in the cafeteria. And then Steve comes over. And he's wearing a full-on cowboy outfit. He says, Bad Girls was number one in the theaters this week. I'm going to go ahead. Awesome. I'm going to get dressed up. I'm going to the theater, guys. Who wants to come? No.
I didn't write it down. Why was he wearing the cowboy outfit again?
I don't know, because I didn't write it down either. I wrote down that he said, "Guys, I made a horrible mistake." And then I think they said, "What, you wearing that outfit?" or something like that.
Does he ever explain why he's wearing the outfit?
I don't know, but I didn't write it down either. And he's like, "No, the mistake is I have made Myra join a convent." Dun, dun, dun.
Nuns part one.
Yeah.
Of the week.
Now we're at the convent. We see a bunch of nuns walking by. I'm looking for Myra. I don't see her. Then, out from the door, Steve, Waldo, and Eddie all pop out, and they're all dressed as nuns. They're going to try to blend in with the convent.
This is good stuff. Hey, so I want to make one really, really stretchy one stretch comment here.
Okay.
So remember a couple weeks ago, I think it was the debut of Sister, and there was skunks in both Family Matters and then one of the episodes of Sister. And I was like, "Oh, there's a connection. I bet you there's going to be an episode coming up where there's skunks in the rest of the shows." We don't have skunks, but we have black and white nuns like outfits. I think that might be a little bit of a connection, barring the obvious connection for the rest of the episodes this week.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the skunk part. I think there was a skunk in like the campground, but then someone was like holding a skunk, like someone didn't realize it was a skunk, like just holding it. Like,
I mean, if anybody, that would have been Waldo.
Because
everybody else would know what a skunk is.
Yeah. But I think Waldo was holding a skunk.
Anyways.
So yeah, we've got our, we know this happens a lot, but all the nuns just start doing yard work. It's funny because there's like one nun's like got a backpack leaf blower on. It's just funny seeing it. Like, I mean, they do, man. Obviously yard work's got to get done, right?
They got to do stuff. They're not eschewing technology. They're trying to get stuff done.
They're not Amish. They're allowed to have their electricity and gas.
Yeah, right.
So the plan is for the guys to be subtle and try to find Myra. And what happens? Waldo immediately goes up to another nun and is like, "Hey, you seen Myra?" And then Steve and Eddie quickly pull him away. And then
this is Sister Bernadette, by the way, right?
Now we meet Sister Bernadette. She comes over and talks to Steve. Eddie and Waldo come over and talk to them as well. And they tell her that they're looking for Myra. They describe her, but she doesn't know who Myra is at this point.
So I'm going to say probably not, but did you recognize Sister Bernadette at all?
No.
No. And I don't, quite frankly, I don't think she looked like we're used to seeing the person I'm about to tell you look like. So this is Judy Ann Elder. Judy Ann Elder becomes Harriet in that season 8 when they replace Mary Jo Payton. So this is the future Harriet.
Gotcha. Okay. So,
and also, have we gotten to the sister joke yet?
I don't know.
Well, there's a little line right here where they it's the guys are like, oh yeah, she's a sister, like she's a black sister, but they say sister and kind of in a kind of tongue in cheek way.
I gotcha.
So like reference, you know, the
didn't,
new show.
Sister, didn't catch sister. It. I remember it though.
Yeah.
So from here we go to the Winslow's house. Harriet is working on the sink upstairs. We kind of know what happened. She probably dropped her ring down the sink. Estelle and Laura come in after hearing a noise, and she tells them, yeah, I think my ring fell down the sink, and I'm taking apart this pipe because I've got to get it out before Carl gets home, because Carl has been telling me not to put my ring on the sink, and now, what do you know happens? I drop it down the sink. So she tells her mom, hey, go downstairs, look out for Carl, while me and Laura try to get this pipe off. So she goes downstairs. They're working on the pipe. They pull on it real hard with the wrench, and it starts spraying everywhere, just covering Laura and Harriet in water. So they scream, of course.
Laura clearly has gotten the Carl genes when it comes to repairs.
And the scream lets Carl know something's going on, and Carl comes upstairs, somehow getting by Estelle, and is wondering what they are doing. I think he kind of stands behind them for a second, right?
He does.
And just kind of watches silently. Harriet tells Carl that her ring went down the drain. They were trying to get it out. And he tells her, well, I warned you that this could happen. But don't worry. Your ring is not in the sink. I saw it on the counter and I put it up here in the medicine cabinet. I wasn't sure. Like, was he trying to teach her a lesson? And like, so she wouldn't think, so this would all happen? Or was she, was he doing that in like kindness to like not make it fall down the sink?
Yeah, I think he was trying to just be cautious. And for whatever reason, I don't know why she would think that she knocked her ring. I mean, if she thinks she put it somewhere and then comes back an hour later and it's not there, I guess you might, that might be one place you go. But like, I feel like you would know. Like, I feel like there would be you would know if you knocked something down the sink. It wouldn't just be like, oh, where'd it go? It must be down the sink. It's not like they have a cat or anything.
I don't know. Like, you wake up in the morning, like, really early sometimes and just go in the bathroom not really realizing what you're doing, and that could happen, I guess.
Maybe.
I don't know. Anyways, Carl, I think, what?
He goes to get the ring out of the cabinet. And as he is getting the ring out of the cabinet.
Oh, that's right.
He fumbles it around, and it goes down.
And he drops it down the drain.
Right.
He's like, oops. Harriet hands him the wrench, and he gets to work. So I think Laura and Harriet leave the room with Estelle. Or maybe they come back. I can't remember if they come back in, they leave and come back, or if they're watching the whole time. But anyways, he starts to try to get the pipe off, and then starts spraying him while Harriet and Laura laugh at him.
Right.
Back at the convent, nun aerobics is going on now, and it's great. It's funny. It's we've got 20 nuns just doing, like, they've got the little step boxes in the middle.
Yeah, they're going for it.
Hardcore aerobics. And Steve Waldo and Eddie are doing it too. They're off to like one far side, like as far away from the instructor as you can be, but they're trying to do it, but they're having a real tough time keeping up.
Right.
Steve is stumbling all over the place, eventually trips on his box, trips over like Waldo or Eddie. They all kind of stumble around, and that's it. It's discovered. The nuns now know that they are men and not actual nuns.
Men.
So they are like, what are you guys doing here? And one nun goes off to call the police. And then, what do you know, Myra walks in, not wearing a nun outfit, normal clothes. She goes over to Sister Bernadette and she's like, hey, have you seen my aunt, whatever her name is? And she's like, oh yeah, she went off to do this. And she's like, but hey, we've got a big problem right now. There's men that have snuck into here. And then she points over to the other side to where Steve, Eddie, and Waldo are. Myra sees Steve and the other guys and runs over, asks why they're dressed like that. And Steve's like, well, we came to stop you from becoming a nun. And she's like, why would you think I would become a nun? I'm just here visiting my aunt.
I keep trying to have sex with you all the time. Why would I want to be a nun?
And Steve tells Myra, something... For me to do this and to go into these depths to save you, all it means is that my feelings for you are getting even stronger than I realized, and I want you back, but no more drawing naked pictures of me.
Fair enough.
And now they're back together. That's all it took.
That's it. Do you think this is like the 90s equivalent of like a sexting episode in a modern high school comedy?
No.
No.
They kiss. The nuns clap. She starts like pinning him down on the bench or something outside and starts making out with him while all the other nuns are nice. Walk back inside, leaving the two of them with their privacy. End of episode. And then credit scene. We get a full minute of nothing but nun aerobics.
Well, not just nun aerobics, but Steve is in there just going wild.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah.
Next up, 8:30, we got Boy Meets World. It's a brand new episode. Season one, right? Episode 20? I think it's we're in season one still, right? It seems like we watched so much of this. Because a lot of those shows have like their first season's like six episodes or whatever. But they knew this was a hit. 20 episodes already in.
Yeah, this was a winner.
The Play's the Thing is the name of this one. It starts off, we've got Feeny. He's walking into his class, and he's like, all right. This is what we're going to do. I want everyone to just let out your most agonizing groan right now. So the whole class is just like, and then he's like, all right, good. Now it's time to plan the spring class play. And then everyone like actually really groans. And it's even bigger than the first one. And he's like, all right, well, this is the play this year. This year, we're doing a play that's got everything that you guys would want. It's got sword fights and death and ghost. And we are doing selections from Hamlet.
Not even the whole play. They're just doing selections.
Yeah. And no one seems too excited at this point. Maybe Minkus. But Feeny starts giving out all the parts, like, immediately. There's no auditions. He's just like, Sean, you are a spear carrier. And Sean's like, oh, is that an important role? He's like, no, it's just a role with the least lines that you have to memorize. And then Topanga, you are going to be our Ophelia, because Ophelia was someone who was driven crazy or whatever. And then right here, we get, not one, but two, a double diss of the week.
Topanga insane? What a stretch.
If I were a less evolved person, I'd say cram it, Brillo head.
All right. So after that, we find out.
It felt like more than that in the episode. It felt like it was just diss after diss after diss.
I probably could have kept going, but these were just like boom, boom, back to back. So those are the ones. Okay. We find out Minkus is Polonius, who's a little upset because he finds out he already knows that he's only got like 48 lines or something like that. And Prince Hamlet is going to be, and he starts describing the part of Prince Hamlet, which fits Corey to a T, and everyone knows Corey Matthews is going to be Hamlet.
Like the whole class like slowly starts to turn around and look at him.
Yep. That's all the intro. Theme song, we come back to Corey and Morgan in the backyard. Corey's practicing some putt-putt. He's got like a little hole set up. Eric comes out.
Morgan's a windmill. We're not going to say that Morgan was the windmill.
Oh, was she?
That was the whole joke. Like, she was, like, moving her hands and feet, or, like, her feet around, really, to be, like, a windmill so that he could practice a windmill hole.
That's good. Eric needs to borrow some money from Corey. Did we find out why he needs to borrow money, or just that he needs to borrow it? I know why he doesn't have money, but what this money is for.
For dates, right? For a date.
Is that all it is? Okay.
I think so.
He's like, I need $5, and if you give me $5, you know what I'll do? I'll throw the goofy golf tournament, because apparently it's Eric and his mom versus Corey and his dad in a mini golf tournament when they go to the Jersey Shore every year.
Right.
And Eric and his mom always win. And Eric's like, I'll throw the golf tournament this year. And this is what Corey's practicing for in the backyard. And he's like, you know what? I don't need you to throw this thing for me to win. And then Eric picks up a club, sinks a putt, and he's like, yeah, you do. From here, we go to the back to the classroom. Everyone's practicing Hamlet, reciting lines and everything. Corey's not really into it. This is not for him. He doesn't like doesn't like the choice of play. Like, he wanted something more action.
He's bored. Yeah, he's bored.
Everyone's kind of just discussing the play at this point, and Corey is just waiting for like the sword killing to start, which hasn't started yet. And Corey suggests we should.
Hey. Yeah, I remembered why Eric needed that money.
No,
because, and it's important. It's part of the storyline because they cut his salary at the market.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't bring that up yet. That's why he doesn't have money. I couldn't remember why.
Right.
So yeah, everyone's salary got cut like 5% at the market because I guess,
right.
I don't know, it's not doing well or something like that.
I guess. So anyways.
So sorry. Yeah, back to the classroom. Everyone's discussing the play. Corey starts to suggest that maybe they make some Hollywood changes to Hamlet. Make it a little more Spielberg. Put some more action into it. And Feeny stands up and starts to explain the genius of Hamlet. Corey, still not on board. No. Topanga comes in. She's wearing her costume for the play. And hands Corey his costume, who he calls it a mini dress and pantyhose. He's not excited and says, you know what? I'm not wearing this thing. And even that, I'm quitting. I'm not in the play anymore. And he walks out.
Corey, come on, man.
We go into the hall where Corey and Sean are talking about the play. This has got to be a few days later, right? This isn't the same day, I don't think. Because he's talking about how like Minkus isn't any good.
Yeah, a few days later.
And
No, that's not.
Is this right away?
No. This is, yeah, I think this is the part that you talked about is further on. So they are in the hallway though. They're talking about trying to get Feeny just to change parts of the play to make it more of like what Corey wants. And then it just goes to Corey's to the house.
Yeah, Minkus is like in the background of this scene too, and he thinks that thinks he will save the play as Hamlet is what Minkus is thinking, that he's all that the play needs. And Corey thinks that Feeny is going to beg him to come back and be Hamlet.
Right.
So yeah, back at the house, Eric's in the kitchen. Corey comes in and tells him that he just sank 18 holes in a row, that he's in trouble. And
Eric is good.
Eric informs him. No, this is Corey that sunk 18 in a row.
Oh, Corey says that.
Yeah, Corey came in from the backyard.
Oh, yeah, Corey, yeah. Yep.
You're in trouble. Sunk 18 in a row. And then Eric's like, well, doesn't matter.
We're not going.
Trip's canceled. And Corey's shocked. Dad's pay got cut too. What? Yeah, the market's not doing well. Tells him that the district manager came in, cut wages from everyone. Corey doesn't get it, though. He's like, why? I mean, why can this happen? Like, Dad, I mean, you're the manager. Well,
Corey thinks Alan is like the boss, like the top dog boss and can do whatever he wants.
It's like, you're not a spear thrower, are you, Dad? Like, you should be able to take control, like throw your weight around a little bit. And that kind of, I guess, upsets Alan a little bit, but also gets him thinking a little bit.
I think it gets him thinking more than gets him upset.
Yeah. I think he's upset too, though. Like, he's like, man, I kind of look like a little punk to my kid. Like, maybe I should do something. So it's late at night now. We see Alan in the kitchen, lights are off. He's just there, like, thinking, and, like, in a Hamlet pose, like, intentionally, obviously.
Oh, this is a very Hamlet-inspired scene.
Yeah. Amy comes down. He asks her if she thinks of him as a spear carrier, does she think that he's, like, a leader? And he's, like, just wondering how people see him and thinks that he really needs to do something. He needs to go talk to Bob. That's the
district
manager guy.
And Amy's worried. Amy's worried that Alan will not be able to control his temper when he's talking to Bob.
Yeah, so what Amy does is grabs like a cantaloupe off the counter, puts it in his hand. He's holding it just like a skull in Hamlet and tells him, hey, why don't you take this this melon and pretend this is Bob and talk to Bob like you would go in there and tell him what you need for this company to work right. And he's like, goes through like what he's gonna say, and it's pretty good. Like, it sounds like maybe this will work to me. And then she approves like what he says, and then she goes upstairs or something like that, right? So she goes upstairs,
yeah.
And then
they all kinda,
he's still down there. He didn't go up. He's down there, and he's talking. He grabs the cantaloupe again. I think it's still in his hand, and talks to Bob the melon one more time. And he's like, let me show you what I really think of you. And then he just smashes the melon on the ground in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So next scene, we're back at school. Sean is in costume for his he's not the spear thrower at this point, right? Like, is he already?
No, he's been promoted to his new part, to Polonius, I believe.
Yeah, Corey, Feeny shifted all the roles around. He's Polonius now. He's got like a like inflatable stomach kind of. And tells him, I mean, he's like, this is pretty cool now. Like, I'm really enjoying it. Like, especially Act 3, Scene 4, watch what happens. And he, like, gets to die in the scene. So he's, like, pretending to die against the lockers. And Yeah, he's into it. Sean is into it.
Yeah. He's having fun.
He wants Corey to come back. He says that Minkus just sucks as Hamlet. Like, everything he's doing is bad. But Corey says, no, I'm not coming back. Like I said, unless Feeny takes my suggestions. And Sean's like, there's no way that's happening. He's not changing the play for you or for anyone. And Corey wants Sean to quit as well. But Sean's like, no. There's too many people that depend on me in this play. And even my dad's coming to see it now. And Corey's like, why don't we just go play basketball instead? And he's like, I can't. I got rehearsal. And he runs off.
This episode does a really good job of like having the metaphors across both of the storylines. I really appreciated how they did this episode.
Yeah, it's good. A little later, it's rehearsal time again. Feeny stops Minkus midline and it's like, Minkus, I don't think he says, Minkus, you suck, but like Minkus does suck at this.
Well, he's not even looking at the audience. He does the entire scene looking at the back of the set.
Which he blames because he didn't have his glasses on, right?
Well, right, he didn't have a glass on. He's like, just wear your glasses, man. Like, he's like, what are you doing? Why aren't you looking at the audience? He's like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, Minkus is just trying to do his own thing, trying to make it better, trying to be the star of the show. And Feeny's like, that's it. I've had enough. Everyone go home.
Get out of here.
And then Corey goes over and talks to Feeny. He's like, hey, I didn't realize that me quitting would have such a big effect on this play. I'll come back. I'll be Hamlet again. And Feeny sits him down. And he's like, look, Minkus is Hamlet now. No matter how bad it is, Minkus is Hamlet. But, I mean, there is a spear carrier opening if you want that. And Corey says, I mean, I wouldn't have quit if we were doing a cooler play. And Feeny tells him, I mean, you're right. Shakespeare is dry and tedious for some people, and especially someone your age. Maybe you're not affected by it. And Feeny hits the lights, grabs a spear, and then starts to say some like Hamlet lines, right? Like starts to recite some of the lines from the play.
Well, what's fun here, yeah, is he starts doing this scene from Hamlet, and he's doing the lines, and the things that Corey are saying, while it doesn't seem like that, those are the, like, the actual responses to those lines in the play. They're like, oh God, or whatever. Like the lines that Corey says are the lines from Hamlet.
And it's creeping Corey out. Corey looks scared from this whole thing. Feeny's intense in the scene, and he's just really showing Corey how intense Hamlet can be. And Feeny finishes the scene, and he's like, of course, I'm no Steven Seagal, though. And then that's the end of the scene.
God. Of all the people. Don't be a Steven Seagal.
Back at the house, Alan gets home. He did go and talk to his boss, and his dad's not home yet, right? Like, everyone's kind of sitting around, that's right. And, like, we find out that he went and talked to his boss, and everyone's a little worried that there's a chance that he might get fired after he goes and tells his boss this stuff.
Well, yeah, he's kind of challenging his superior.
Then his dad walks in and tells him that he almost quit, but he didn't. He knows there's a lot of people that really need him and rely on him. And he compares the lead in the play to his dad, and the whole role of like him being the lead, comparing that to his dad being the lead of the store and making selfish decisions. And Corey apologizes to his dad and realizes that he was wrong saying the stuff that he did. And then Morgan yells, hey, I think Morgan and her mom come downstairs and they're like, hey, dad's home, we can start now. And then Corey tells him that he's like, I mean, if you don't ever care. What happens here? Corey tells him, means it. He doesn't. Oh, I don't. He's like, I mean it. I don't even care if this. If I ever see Goofy golf ball again, it's not that big of a deal to me. And he's like, I don't even like it anyways. And his dad's like,
yeah.
Well, I mean, you seem to like it. You seem to enjoy it. You're gonna be real upset now once you go in the backyard and see what's going on. And the two of them run out in the backyard, and his dad has recreated the entire Goofy golf course setup in the backyard, and Corey is so excited.
Yeah, how did he do that without Corey knowing?
Corey goes to school.
Yeah, but he's been home.
He hasn't been in the backyard yet.
Come on, they got those big windows. Corey's always in the backyard. I don't know. I don't buy that.
No, he is terrified of Feeny right now because Feeny might be a ghost, and maybe he was going nowhere near those windows.
It also seems really expensive. Just take your kid to the oceanfront and take him golfing.
Look, we know that this golf course is going to be set up in the backyard for the remainder of this show. It's never going down.
True. True.
So he's like, then Corey's like, Dad, did I ever mention how much I love Goofy Golf? And he's like, oh, it's not exactly the Jersey Shore. And Corey's like, no, it's even better. I mean, we don't have to drive 3 hours. Morgan's not car sick. Mom's not giving us all kinds of problems. And Corey's just excited to go play. So Eric and Amy come out to challenge them. And Corey's like, Dad, I mean, they're really good. Do you want to just quit? And he's like, no. And he's like, my partner and I are not quitting. And then he like whispers over to Corey. He's like, cheating? Yeah. Quitting? No. Because like he's like rigged the course, I think, or something like that.
He's made it so like he knows the secret spots to hit.
He built it, right?
Yeah.
So that's it. That's the end of the episode. We do get a good credit scene here with probably the first night of Hamlet, starring Minkus.
What's definitely the last. So.
Yeah. Corey is standing up there. He's a spear carrier talking to some other guys. Is this other guy anyone important or no?
Not that I can figure out. No.
Like he's listed like guest starring, blah, 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 as spear carrier. And I looked up the guy and like I couldn't. He didn't seem
that important. Yeah, not that I can figure out.
So, the two spear carriers are talking on stage, Corey and this other guy. And the other guy is just kind of like mentioning how lame their parts are. And Corey's like, well, I mean, you can always just make it your own. And he tells Corey, all right. And then the other guy takes his spear, stabs Sean's balloon belly with it. Chaos just breaks out on stage. Everyone's like fighting and going crazy. Corey says, ah, Shakespeare. This is how it's meant to be. And then Corey starts just pushing everyone one by one off the stage with his spear. And then he's the only one left on stage, does like a touchdown dance in the middle, celebrating.
I mean, it's chaos.
As he's the last one standing. That's it. That's Boy Meets World for this week. That's Boy Meets World.
Yeah. So I want to say, so we have a nun, obviously, big nun theme in Family Matters. We're about to talk about Step by Step,
okay,
where there's also a nun. So I was looking at Boy Meets World. I'm like thinking like, where's the nun here? Where's the nun here? There's a nun here. And then I'm like, well, we're talking Hamlet. One of the most famous lines in Hamlet is when I think it's Hamlet says to Ophelia, get thee to a nunnery. So I'm going to call that the nun link.
Okay.
Family Matters, Boy Meets World, and what we're going to see here in a minute in Step by Step.
All right. So yeah, this is season 3, episode 21, The Case of the Missing Diary. Starts off, we got Dana and Karen in the kitchen. They're both studying. Karen screams and jumps up because she saw a spider. Dana also screams. They're both scared of spiders. Fine. Al comes in and is like, what's going on? And then they're like, we saw spiders. And she's like, you're a bunch of wussies. And like, they don't want to kill the spider. She picks it up, shows it to him. They both run off into the living room. And then Al's in there just with the spider alone, looks at the spider and is like, well, I mean, it is awfully cold outside. You deserve somewhere warm to sleep. Like Dana's bed. And then runs upstairs and, I guess, puts in her bed.
Puts in her bed. That's it.
Theme song, we come back. Cody is in the kitchen now. He's on a typewriter, slowly typing, like one word per minute maybe. And he is apparently taking a creative writing class and has to write a story. And he wants to write like a suspenseful mystery, but tells Dana that he
like a 40s style. Like a 40s style noir mystery.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he gets to. And he's like, Dana, I'm just not getting anywhere. And then Karen comes in. And she's like, hey, has anyone seen my diary? I think someone took it. And now Cody has his idea for his story, The Case of the Missing Diary. And then we go right into, like, the story. Like, the rest, pretty much the rest of the episode is just Cody's story, right?
Yep.
So,
Big City, 1940.
Yeah, it appears that we're now inside of the story. Sam Spud Detective Agency is where we are. Cody is Sam Spud in this story. And he's about to call it a day when Karen, who is Kitty Meow in this story, comes into the agency for help. And this whole thing, there's like a whole bunch of like puns and one-liners. Like it's joke after joke after joke. None of them are that good, but...
My favorite was the name on the door. That was a good joke.
Oh, she's like, I couldn't find the door because your name is backwards. That part?
Yeah.
And then what? She like reads it backwards. I forget.
Dupp's Mass or something like that. Yeah. Soup's mess.
So, yeah, she needs help because we find out that Kitty Meow is a singer in a nightclub and her diary was stolen and she needs Sam Spud's help to find it. And he decides to take the case.
He's on it.
So that's where we go now. The Club Sandwich is the name of the place. It's Kitty's club. She's up on stage.
Kitty works there. It's not her club.
Oh, yeah. She works. She's up on stage and she sings at this club. She's in a group with Dana and Al. I think, is it the Andrew Stepsisters is the name of the group?
Something like that. It's supposed to be a play on the Andrew Sisters, yeah.
Yeah, so the Andrew Stepsisters. We see JT as a character in this whole thing. He's like the
Buddy
host.
Buddy Rimshot.
Buddy Rimshot. Frankie the Tuna Sandwich is the owner, played by Frank. Mm-hmm. Buddy Rimshot, JT calls up Miss Honeydew, who's Carol. And it's her turn to sing. So she goes up there. Right. We see Brendan's on the piano. And then
that was awesome. I like that. Because clearly he has no idea what he's doing. And it's great.
Every once in a while he hits like a note that's like, oh, that might be right. And then it's like he's just hitting keys and there's not even music playing. So, yeah, she's singing her song. Frank is like eyeing her from the crowd. They give her like a minute here to sing. And she finishes up and she tells the crowd... she walks into the crowd and talks to Frankie, and tells him that if he wants to see her later, then she can kind of make that happen, right?
Yeah. They're just flirting.
Frankie runs into Cody at this point, Sam Spud, and tells him that there's a diary that's been stolen from this establishment, and everyone is a suspect. And as he says this, a nun walks by.
A nun.
That nun's a suspect.
Suspect.
All right, so next scene, we've got JT and Brendan. Buddy and... I don't even know if they gave Brendan, the piano player, a character.
Yeah, name. I don't know.
They're collecting their pay from Frankie. Sam Spud is still there investigating. Kitty's still there. Asks Frankie about... that wouldn't make sense if Kitty... that's right. Kitty Honeydew, that's Carol. Asks Frankie what's going on with this guy, Sam... And then Sam starts to question Kitty and suggests that the other girls in her group, Kitty suggests that there might be some jealousy going on with the other girls and Karen's character.
Yeah. And then there's a Three's Company joke.
Oh, was there?
I didn't write it down. I thought I wrote it down, but oh, never mind. Okay, I did write it down. It comes up later. But yeah, there's a Three's Company joke here where Carol says something about Three's Company.
Then Al, who's Coco something. I remember her first name was Coco, but I can't remember the last
name. I think they just said, I don't know if they had a last name.
It's just Coco?
I just wrote Coco.
Al comes through on her way to leave. Apparently she also plays baseball with the Detroit Tigers when she's not singing.
No, she's going to try out.
Oh, she's trying out. But she has a jersey and pants?
Yeah, sure. She's dressed for the role you want.
I guess now I'm trying to think. Like, when you travel for a baseball team, are you wearing like a jersey? You might be.
They might give you like a warm up,
or they're not really tryouts something. For baseball teams.
I mean, they're probably some kind of tryout.
I think that's what like the double like A and triple A is. Like, they just see you play and like, hey, you're on our team now.
You don't think there's like a combine style week for baseball?
I don't know.
I mean, it would just be really boring, which is why they don't put it on TV like NFL. But
yeah. So as she's walking out, Coco Al, she trips, drops her suitcase that she's got in her hand. And in the suitcase, we see dynamite, a gun, but most importantly, Kitty's diary.
Dun, dun, dun.
And she says, I've been framed. And Cody's like, that's it. I'm cuffing you. I'm taking you back. And cuffs Al. And that's where we go. We're back at Sam's office. Al's asleep. Like, he's had her kidnapped and held without anything for hours. Handcuffed to a chair. She wakes up. First thing she tells us, she's innocent. She's been framed. And says that Cody's like, that's okay. I sent the diary to a lab to get fingerprinted. We're going to find out whose fingerprints are on this thing. And then I'll let you know if you did this or not. And then Mark walks in. He's dressed up like a scientist. That's his role in this whole thing.
He's got like a German accent. I'm trying to figure out why there were windmills outside the window the entire time.
They make some comment about Boy Meets World, Morgan and golf game, right?
Is that what it is? Okay, I'll buy that. Because they make a reference to like something about what's going on outside or something. And I was like, what is going on outside?
Yeah, so Mark walks in. He's got the results from this test, and he tells Cody there were tons of prints all over it. And he starts going through a list of everyone's prints. They include, like, even Sam's fingerprints were on there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Sam's like, oh, that means I'm a suspect too, I think. And then he's like, Mark, wrangle all the suspects together. I've got some more questioning to do. Because I think, does he say that, like, Al's fingerprints aren't even on it at all or something?
I don't know. I didn't catch that.
But he's like, I got a way to make them sing. And then he pulls out a karaoke machine and starts singing in the office.
Heck yeah, man. Karaoke's great.
Back at the club sandwich, all the suspects are there. Cody explains that someone has framed Coco, and he starts going around the room and, like, kind of giving reasons why different people didn't do it. And he's like, wasn't Dana, wasn't JT. He then reveals that Frank is...
In the process, everyone is kind of admitting that they have read it. They just didn't steal it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He reveals that Frank is Coco's father, which was a big surprise to everyone, but he didn't steal the diary either. And then Cody has now narrowed it down to Brendan the piano player and Honeydew Carol, and Carol straight out confesses it was her. She says that singing is all she knows, and what is she going to do when she gets pushed out by this younger performer? Sell office equipment, start my own talk show, or not office equipment.
No,
exercise equipment. Yeah, yeah. Joke on the Thighmaster, right?
Yeah, and then I assume she had her
talk show that I didn't know about.
Talk show,
I guess. Yeah, so.
I probably should have looked that up to confirm, but
I'm sure there was
there. Yeah, yeah. Right.
And then Cody cuffs her, takes her away. And that's it. That's the end of the story. We go back to the house though, where Cody is finishing up the story in like real life. Al comes down with Karen's diary and is like, hey, someone must have put this in my drawer by mistake. And she's like, you didn't read it, did you? And Al's like, why would I do that? And then she starts like reciting lines that she's memorized from her diary and then walks away. Karen,
it looks like she was actively on the Suzanne Summers show during this episode.
And you just looked it up, you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the show was going on at the same time as Step by Step. I gotcha.
Yeah. This season, yeah.
Karen chases Al out of the room, and that gives Cody an idea for his next story, the case of the dead stepsister. And he starts typing and stops, and he's like, oh, man, I really feel like that old babe a murder she wrote. And that's the end of the episode. We do get a credit scene with a full performance from the Andrews stepsisters at the end.
Yeah, they're singing. Good for them.
How many episodes did the Suzanne Summers show have?
Oh, I don't know. It says one season. It doesn't even have its own Wikipedia.
Is that what it was called? The Suzanne Summers
show? Suzanne Summers show, yeah. Let me see if IMDb's got like the episode count. 65?
Really?
It says, well, okay, so it hadn't started quite yet. It started September 12th, 1994. So I wonder if they knew it was going to start. And so they were like
teasing.
Like it had been announced. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's like 65 episodes. Wow. It was a daily talk show.
Two months, I guess. Or no, 2.5, 3 months, something like that.
No.
Weekends.
So maybe, I mean, I guess there was a break. So it starts in September. September 12th is the first episode. It's daily. And then the last episode,
gave it to the end of the year and then canceled it probably.
Yeah, November. So.
Sister, season one, episode six, The Pimple is the name of this episode. Starts off where it's school. Tia's checking out a guy at school, showing Tamara this guy that she likes. And then he walks over to him. Tia introduces him to Tamara. Tia's very much into him. Like, she makes that pretty clear right here. And Tamara is not impressed by this guy.
Well, they're really different. He's definitely more in line with Tamara, which makes sense.
Yeah, good luck.
Forever.
Especially with another episode like this. Theme song, we come back. We're at the house. Lisa has just sold a lady a dress that she made. So that's her new thing. She makes dresses and sells them to people now.
Well, we know she's a designer. We know that's what she wanted to do. So this makes sense.
But this is the first dress she's ever sold.
Right. Yeah, this is like her success. So.
We also find out that Tia does have a date with the guy from the hallway. His name's Anthony. So Tia's excited. Lisa's excited. That's where we're kind of at right now.
Anthony, by the way, is the dude. Okay, so Mighty Ducks 2, recently number one movie we both, I think, really enjoy. So there was Keenan,
his group of people like out on the street. Yeah.
So so this Tony guy is, Anthony guy is the, like the main guy of that group, like the kind of the leader of that group.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like he's not on the team, but he's kind of
right.
Like
he doesn't like really play, but he's like the hype guy. Yeah.
That guy's got the knuckle puck.
Yep.
So we skip ahead a little bit later where Roger's over for dinner. Lisa's just really excited. She's really thinks that this dress thing's going to kick off. She's cooked for everyone. Ray thinks it's too spicy. And Lisa is looking for like the next big thing that she's going to do for this whole thing. She's like, I need a slogan. I need ads. We really got to get going on this. And Ray kind of warns her at this point. He's like, you got to be a little careful because a lot of companies expand too fast and then they fail. And she gets a little upset by that.
She does.
Tia, at this point too, realizes she's got a pimple. She also has a date in a couple days, and she's worried that this pimple is going to ruin this date.
I really liked Roger's idea for a slogan.
I kind of remember. What was it?
I can't remember. I don't think I wrote it down exactly because I feel like it had more of a rhyme to it, but I wrote, if you're curvy or busty, see Lisa.
No, that was it.
That was it. We gotta love it. Because the whole mind is like, look, if we can get ladies with big boobs in here, that'll make my day.
We go upstairs. Tamara's trying to help Tia with her pimple. They've got like a whole bunch of like
everything,
creams and ointments and stuff. And then the two of them go to sleep. And we go from there into a dream sequence where Tia, right? Yeah, Tia is dreaming that she's getting married to Anthony. She's on the altar, lifts up the veil. He sees the pimple, screams, and runs from the altar right there at the
wedding. Her because of the pimple.
Then the church choir just starts all in unison singing about her pimple and then random dandruff that she has, and until the point where she screams in her dream and it wakes her up. The next morning, Lisa is on the phone talking to someone about buying an ad for, I don't know, in the paper or phone book or whatever it is.
Phone book. The most worthless. I mean, back then it was probably worth it.
Yeah. She's trying to get a deal like, oh, well, that's the price for a full page. What can I get for a half page? Well, do you want a dress? Well, you're not married. Maybe buy a dress. Like, she's trying to do whatever she can. While she's on the phone, the doorbell rings. Ray's like, I'll go get it. So he goes out. He goes to go to the door. And the lady that bought the dress from her in the beginning of the episode is back, and she's decided she hasn't worn it. She just looked at it and realized she doesn't like it, and she wants to return it and get her $75 back.
Yep, which is pretty sad. Like, it's just lame.
Yeah, and Ray's like, oh, man, he knows what's going on. He's like, in his head, he's just thinking, I don't want Lisa to know what's going on. She'll be so upset. He's like, all right, here's $75. I'll take it for you. Thanks. So she leaves. He's got the dress in her hands. He hears Lisa real excited in the kitchen and quickly decides to hide the dress in the closet. Lisa comes out and is very excited to tell Ray that she has got her first quarter page ad in the phone book.
I don't dislike this strategy from Ray. I think he has good intentions.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, he does have good intentions. He absolutely has good intentions. But I don't have a problem with what he's doing here.
Yeah. A little later, we're back upstairs. Tia's got a turtleneck pulled all the way up over her nose, trying to cover up this pimple. Pulls it down to show Tamara that this thing's getting real big now. And
oh, yeah, it's out of control.
Tamara tries to tell her it's not that bad, but of course she doesn't believe her. And guess what? It's date night. The doorbell rings, and Anthony is there for the date. So Tia's like, Tamara, you gotta help me out. Remember that time we switched places when we did that test and it worked out perfectly? Let's do it again. Let's switch places. You go on this date with Anthony, pretend to be me, and everything will be perfect.
Do you think you're just going to lean on this gimmick for the entire series?
I mean, it would make sense, but it's going to get real old real fast, I think.
It would make sense? It would lack creativity, if that's what you meant to say.
I mean, I just think about things like Family Matters, how it's literally the same thing.
That's Steven, yeah.
Over and over again.
You're right.
She's going to go out on this date. Tia's going to, or Tamara's going to pretend to be Tia. So We're out. I thought it was like a restaurant or something, but it turns out to be like a coffee place. It's the date. Tamara is looking real bored. And we find out that they went to go see a foreign film before they went to this coffee place. And she's like, he's like, did you like the movie? And like, she's like, eh, it would have been real cool. And like, then they start getting talking about like Freddy Krueger and like if he was in the movie. And then it's like something switches. They both are now interested in something together. They're both talking about horror movies and Freddy Krueger.
Right. They're finding common ground.
They're vibing. And Tamara's not supposed to be, though. She's just supposed to be there kind of as the fill-in. And it looks like Tamara is actually starting to like Anthony now.
But she's got to be having a good time, or else he's not going to have a good time. And then he's not going to want to go on a second date. So it's not going to work out for Tia anyways.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. The waiter brings over a couple cappuccinos. She gets like a little froth mustache. He thinks it's cute. Tells her to wipe it off, I think. And then tries to teach her how to play some chess. Because we know that he likes chess. He's like on the chess team and stuff. Maybe even the captain. And he's like, here, let me show you how to play. It's not that hard. And like grabs her hand and is like holding her hand and show. For, I don't know why. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But like holding.
I didn't really understand this technique either. Except just as a reason to flirt.
Like not even like pointing at the fingers. Like rooks and like king. And like,
he is though. He's like, this is your rook. But it's like, who? What is
he's just like pointing at the middle of her hand. Like you've got five things right there.
Like, it doesn't even make sense. Like, what's the like?
The important part. Where does that go? The important part is he's holding her hand and she likes it, and they are into each other. Back at the house, Lisa is looking in the closet where Ray has hidden this dress, and we know she's gonna find it. But Ray stops her, so maybe not. She keeps trying to go back into the closet, and he keeps trying to pull her away by giving her different excuses and tells her that you know what? I got a great idea for you. Maybe you could also make baby clothes, because we know there's a lot of babies out there and they need clothes. And she likes the idea. And,
not a bad idea.
Yeah, maybe she's into it. While we have Tia standing at the front door waiting for her sister to come home. She wants to know what happened on this date. But as she does this, she accidentally rats herself out to her parents.
So, question.
Yeah.
Presumably, I don't know. I think that we kind of like to think that at least the parents know the difference between the twins, right? Between twins, generally. Like, we think that your mom knows who you are. So the implication here is that they did not. The implication here is that they did not realize that that was not the twin that they thought it was.
Until she said the wrong name?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Do we buy that? Or do we just say, whatever?
I mean, they were looking at her from the back of her head. Like, she kind of came downstairs.
She's probably been around all day, right? You think this is the first time they've seen her all day? Which is possible.
Totally possible. It's probably been 3 to 4 hours.
Okay. All right. But you see what I'm getting at here. Like, I do. It seems like that they would, know who that was.
She could have been upstairs. I don't know. But anyways, they catch her. They know that they switch places. And they ask her, I think Ray asks her, did you do this because that's it? And she's like, real upset at this point. Embarrassed, upset, runs out into the kitchen. And Ray's like,
yeah.
All right, I guess I got to go talk to her. And this is not the Tia. This is Tia, right?
Yeah. This is Tia, yeah.
Tia is not the one that's been living with Ray for all this time. Tia is the one that's with Lisa. So Ray is having a conversation now with Tia, who he's only known for a few weeks, and goes in there, talks to her in the kitchen. He apologizes for pointing out the zit and tells her, look, you can't worry about things like this. Like, if you're worried about your looks and you think a guy's worried about your looks, that guy doesn't deserve you anyways if they can't get past something like that. And she's like, I agree. Anthony has already said that it's my insides that he cares about, not my looks or anything. So she seems to appreciate the talk that Ray has with her.
She does. Yeah, this ends pretty well for both of them.
We then go into the living room. Lisa's back in the closet and she has found the dress. Ray walks out, sees her with the dress in hand. He tells her what happened, and she's upset. And she's like, Ray, I don't need your help with this. Like, I got this. And he tells her, look, it might seem like it, but you did not fail. You are very good at this. You're creative. You've got good ideas. And you know what? You can just sell that dress again. She never even wore it. Just sell it again. And she does thank Ray at the end of this conversation. Like, maybe he's got a okay point, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to help her out.
Yeah. Then Anthony and Tamara get home. They are out on the porch talking, pretty awkward, and they agree to go on another date together. I guess T is just doing that for Tamara at this point.
I would say it's only awkward in that way that, like, first date.
It's a lot of like, is he gonna kiss me? Is he not gonna kiss me?
Yeah. I just want to make sure it's not awkward in the way that, like, she's not even the right person. It's just, it's a whole thing, you know?
No, yeah. Like, first date awkwardness for sure.
Yeah.
And eventually, before he leaves, he does kiss her on the cheek and then goes, which is kind of awkward for the situation where, I mean, this is Tamara, but he thinks he's kissing Tia, and Tia sent Tamara out on this date just to, like, hold it over for a week.
Right.
So,
but also because Tamara is falling for him. So now it just complicates things.
Yeah. So Tia didn't see the kiss happen. Tamara goes inside and Tamara tells Tia all about the date, leaving out the kiss part at the end. Tia hugs Tamara, thanks her for having a great night for her, and it seems like everything's going to be okay. We'll just leave it out and not say anything. So later at night,
perfect.
Lisa comes downstairs, finds Tamara in the kitchen, and they have a little talk about what happened. And Tamara tells her, well, there's this boy, and I really like him. And the problem is there's also a friend of mine that likes this boy, too. And I haven't told her yet.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, what you need to do is you need to figure out who is more important, the friend or the guy. And she's like, well, what should I do? And she's like, this is a decision that you need to make on your own. Do you think she knew that she was talking about her sister at this point?
She had to have, right? Because they know that she went on the date with, instead of Tamara. Right? Like, she has to know.
There were like parts where I'm like, she knows. And I'm like, does she know?
I think she knew.
So Tamara goes upstairs.
I would hope she realized that.
Tamara goes upstairs, wakes up her sister in the middle of another pimple nightmare that she was having, and tells her, hey, I left out a part of the date that I didn't tell you about. And she's like, oh, you did? And like, we think she's going to tell her about the kiss, but she's like, yeah, I actually agreed that you're on another date with him next Friday. And she's like all excited and everything.
Yeah.
And then Tia asks her, well, now that you got to know Anthony, I mean, isn't he great? And she's like, yeah, he is great. He's perfect for you. And I guess we're just going to leave it at that. Like, never say anything about it, right?
I doubt we'll see Anthony again anyways.
Yeah. End of episode. We do get a credit scene. Some lady has come to the house and she has bought 3 dresses for her kids. So this whole baby clothing thing is working out perfectly. And they are all either made out of the dress that she made for the other lady, or just the fabric from the dress. They weren't
100% the same dress.
Just cut up the dress and made it into 3 dresses. Just
cut up the dress, made it 3 dresses. She probably made more money off 3 dresses than she did.
Yeah, probably sell those for $50, right? And then 75 for full, and doubling our money here.
Yep.
So that's it. That's our 4 episodes, 4 brand new episodes. It's been a while since we've done 4, I feel like.
Yeah, it has been.
This is the part of the show where we rank the episodes. I haven't put a lot of thought in this yet.
I haven't either. I know what my number 1 episode is.
I got 1. I'm going to go... that's definitely 4 for me.
I'm ready. I'm going to go ahead and go. I've got sister at 4. I've got Family Matters. No, Step by Step at 3. Family Matters at 2. Boy Meets World at 1.
I'm pretty close. I just switched Step by Step and sister at 4 and 3. I've got Family Matters at 2. Boy Meets World at 1.
All right.
Thanks to Joaquin for the theme song again this week.
Yes, Joaquin. Thank you.
TGIFcast@gmail.com. If you want to send in your own version of the theme song at TGIFcast on all social media. What do we got coming up next week on the show?
Same lineup we had this week. Okay. So Family Matters, season 5, episode 23, Boy Meets World, season 1, episode 21, Step by Step, season 3, episode 22, and sister, season 1, episode 7.
Cool. I'm excited about it. We're back into swing of things. We got a full lineup of TJF. I don't know how long that's going to last for. I don't think it's that long, but,
not long.
I know sister's going away soon.
Yeah, we're winding down the spring season, so we've got really just a handful of episodes left for all the shows, and then I've got an idea. I kind of penciled in some stuff for the summer. If you want to take a look at the spreadsheet, but
I'll take a look.
Take a look. Let me know what you think.
All right.